Okay, you ever feel like you're stuck, like really stuck, trying to deal with some big organization?
Oh, tell me about it.
You know that feeling, right? Like you're in a bureaucratic maze, just trying to get the simplest thing done.
Yeah, that feeling of hitting a brick wall over and over again.
Exactly. Well, that feeling, that's what we're diving deep into today.
Oh, this should be good.
We're exploring why so many organizations, especially these big public ones, seem to be perpetually stuck.
Stuck in a rut. Yeah, I've got some thoughts on that.
And we've got a fascinating guide for this journey, this book, straight from the Netherlands, called Wittero-Boulot.
Catchy title.
Yeah.
So, what's the book's take? What's the root cause of all this organizational gridlock?
Well, right off the bat, it dives into this very specific Dutch word, onmacht.
Onmacht. Now, how do you even explain that one?
It doesn't translate perfectly, but imagine that feeling of powerlessness, that sense of being totally overwhelmed by systems that seem impossible to change.
It's like they bottled that universal frustration, you
Yeah.
know, the one we've all felt when dealing with these massive impersonal systems.
Yes, it's like calling customer service and getting bounced around for hours on hold. It's enough to make anyone feel totally powerless.
Exactly. And this book, it links that onmacht feeling to how these organizations are designed at their core. They use the Dutch elections back in December of 23 as a starting point.
Okay, I'm intrigued. What happened in those elections? Was it a mess?
Well, think of it more like a giant pileup of urgency. Big issues, things like the housing crisis, huge backlogs in social services, everything needing a solution, like yesterday. Sound familiar?
Oh, absolutely. It feels like every country is dealing with some version of that right now.
Right. And the thing is, the old ways of fixing things, totally useless. They just weren't cutting it.
Which, again, feels incredibly relevant right now. Like, globally, we're all grappling with these massive interconnected problems, and the usual solutions just feel so frustratingly out of reach. It's like everyone's hitting a wall.
And that's where it gets really interesting. The authors of this book, they argue it's not even just that the systems themselves are failing, which they are,
But
but
what? There's more.
oh yeah, it's that the organizations trapped inside those systems, they're also feeling powerless. Powerless to change things internally and in how they serve the public. Double whammy of onmacht, you could say.
Okay, so you've got these big systems that are failing, and then within those systems, you've got all these organizations that are basically stuck, completely unable to turn things around.
Stuck in quicksand, that's a good way to put it. And here's where this book digs even deeper. They suggest this isn't just about inefficient processes or bad planning.
It's got to be something deeper than that, right?
Right? They're saying it's the legacy of neoliberalism, that emphasis on like hyper-individualism, those market-driven solutions above everything else. It's baked into the DNA of how these organizations work.
Now that you mention it, think about the last time you had to get a permit, any kind of permit.
Don't even get me started on permits.
It's like navigating a maze, right? And you know what this book argues? That this frustration, it's not an accident, it's literally built into the system by design.
You're kidding. So they're saying it's supposed to be that frustrating. What's the logic there? Well, the book argues that this design actually makes perfect sense if you think about it from the perspective of neoliberalism. It's all about individual responsibility, competition, and minimizing the role of government.
So creating a system that's deliberately difficult to navigate actually serves a purpose.
In a way, yes. It shifts the burden onto the individual, making them responsible for figuring it all out. And if they fail, well, that's seen as a personal failing, not a systemic one.
Which, let's be honest, is a pretty convenient narrative for those in power, right? It's a way of deflecting blame and avoiding accountability.
Exactly. And that brings us to another crucial point this book makes, the whole idea of system trust. It's like that basic faith we have that, you know, things will generally work, that our institutions are, for the most part, reliable. Like, we trust that our food is safe to eat, or that the planes we fly in aren't going to fall out of the sky.
Right. It's that unspoken agreement we all have to not completely freak out every time we see a police car or an ambulance. We might not love everything about those systems, but we trust that at a fundamental level, they're there to help.
Precisely. But the book argues that with so many visible failures of these systems, and they bring up the Groningen gas scandal in the Netherlands, which really shook people's faith, that trust starts to erode.
I vaguely remember hearing about that. What was that, like an earthquake caused by gas extraction or something?
Yeah, a series of earthquakes caused by natural gas extraction. And it caused all sorts of damage, physical and emotional. People felt betrayed by the government and the companies involved.
Right, so a clear example of how these systems can fail us in a very real, very tangible way.
And when those failures happen, the book argues, instead of looking for big picture solutions, we tend to retreat into this mindset of micromanaging, trying to control every tiny detail.
Which ironically probably just makes the systems even more complex and harder to manage in the long run.
It's like a vicious cycle. We try to fix things by adding more rules, more regulations, more bureaucracy. And in the process, we end up creating more opportunities for things to go wrong.
It's like that old saying, the road to hell is paved with good intentions. We're trying to make things better, but we end up making them worse.
Exactly. And to illustrate this whole dynamic, they dive into this really compelling example, the case of Khadija Arib.
Khadija Arib. Ring a bell, but give me a refresher. Who is she?
So she was the Speaker of the Dutch House of Representatives. Very well respected, held the position for years. But after her term ended, there were all these complaints made against her. Anonymous complaints about her behavior in office.
Okay, so some kind of scandal.
Well, that's the thing. The book uses this example to show how, instead of looking at the complaints as potentially symptomatic of bigger issues, you know, things like workplace culture, power dynamics, the focus immediately went to Arab as an individual.
So instead of looking at the whole picture, they just pointed the finger at one person.
Exactly. Yeah. And that's a pattern we see again and again, right? When something goes wrong, we look for a scapegoat, someone to blame, instead of examining the system that allowed it to happen.
It's like saying the fish is rotten without ever acknowledging that maybe, just maybe, the whole pond is toxic.
Perfect analogy. And speaking of toxic environments, this book also takes aim at our obsession with speed and optimization, which, let's be real, feels like a hallmark of this whole neoliberal era we've been living in.
Okay, unpack that one for me. I mean, we're constantly being told to be more efficient, more productive, faster. So how has speed become a liability?
That's a great question. And to be clear, this book isn't saying that efficiency is inherently bad, but it's more that in this pursuit of efficiency, in trying to optimize everything, we've created these sort of quarantine bubbles or echo chambers. Maybe that's a better way to put it.
Meaning
we're so focused on hitting those metrics, achieving those short-term gains, that we've completely lost sight of the bigger picture, the human element, the need for adaptability,
right?
You know, those long-term consequences that inevitably come back to bite us.
So we're all sprinting towards what exactly? We've forgotten where we're even running to.
Yeah.
And we're too busy sprinting to notice.
Precisely. Obsessed with the how and completely forgetting the why. Which brings us to a really crucial question this book grapples with. How do we even begin to rebuild from here? Assuming we even want to, which, you know, maybe that's the first question.
It feels like we've outlined some pretty massive problems here. I mean, we've got systems failing left and right, organizations that are practically paralyzed, a total loss of trust in pretty much everything. Plus, this relentless drive for speed that seems to be doing more harm than good. Where do we even start to untangle this mess?
Well, the book offers up a starting point, and I'll warn you, it might seem a little counterintuitive at first. Embracing complexity.
Oh, now there's an idea. Let's just lean into the chaos, why don't we?
Hear me out. What if, instead of clinging to this idea that we can fix all these massive challenges with simple solutions, neat and tidy, we acknowledge the reality? Most of the problems we face today, whether it's climate change or social inequality, you name it, they're inherently complex, messy. And there's no one-size-fits-all solution.
Okay, so you're saying we need to get comfortable with the unknown, with the fact that there isn't always a clear roadmap, no five-step plan to solve every problem. It's more about
improvising. In a way, yes. It's about designing organizations that are more adaptable, more responsive to change, more willing to learn and evolve as they go. The book talks about shifting from this mindset of fixing to a mindset of handling, of working with complexity instead of trying to engineer it away.
Which makes me think about how much emphasis we put on just following the rules, sticking to the plan, even when it's clear that it's not working. Like, we're rewarded for conformity instead of creativity, you know?
100%. And the book actually addresses that directly. They argue that we've lost sight of something they call the moral muscle of our work.
Moral muscle. Okay, now you've got my attention. What in the world is moral muscle?
They're talking about the ethical framework that should underpin everything we do, especially in the realm of public service. Remembering that we're not just cogs in a machine blindly following orders. We have a responsibility to exercise judgment, to make decisions based on what we believe is right, what serves the greater good, even if it means, you know, bending or breaking the rules sometimes.
So having the courage to say, hey, this rule doesn't make sense in this situation, or there's actually a better way to do this. It's about remembering that we're not just serving systems, we're serving people.
Exactly. And they even reference another book here by Eric Poole that talks about the importance of empowering public servants to exercise their judgment, to make those tough calls based on their values and their understanding of a situation. It's not enough to just follow the rules blindly. We need people who can think critically and act ethically, even when it's hard.
So in a way, it's about reclaiming our humanity in the face of these increasingly impersonal systems. We've become so fixated on optimizing for efficiency that we've forgotten about the human cost. And it all ties back to that idea of neoliberalism we were discussing earlier, doesn't it? That emphasis on individual achievement above all else.
Absolutely. It creates this every person for themselves mentality, which, you know, isn't exactly conducive to solving collective problems. And the book highlights this tension beautifully through an interview with a guy named Wolfgang Hovelmann. He's a city official in Amsterdam. And he talks about this constant struggle to balance the needs of individual neighborhoods with this desire to create these uniform citywide policies.
Which feels incredibly relatable, that tension between wanting things to be fair and equal for everyone, while also recognizing that different communities have different needs, different circumstances. It's messy.
Exactly. There's no easy answer. But the point is, we need more nuanced approaches, solutions that can hold both the individual and the collective in mind at the same time, okay. Which is, you know, way easier said than done.
So where does this all leave us? We've covered a lot of ground here, and honestly, I'm feeling a bit overwhelmed. What are we supposed to do with all of this information, all of these complex, interconnected challenges?
You know, I don't think this deep dive was ever about finding all the answers. If anything, it's about asking better questions. It's about acknowledging that the way we've been building and running organizations, it's probably a big part of the problem, especially when it comes to tackling these massive, interconnected challenges we're facing. There's no going back to the way things were, and frankly, that's probably a good thing.
We need a new way forward. One that recognizes the complexity, the messiness of the world we live in.
And maybe, just maybe, that new way forward starts with each of us. Starts with recognizing that we're not powerless. We have a choice, you and I, in how we show up in the world, in the work we do, in the organizations we create and support.
We have more power than we realize to shape the future, even if it doesn't always feel that way. So you listening, what role will you play in all of this? What kind of world do you want to help build? We'll leave you with that thought.